You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Normally on Fridays, I have a long edition, usually 2 hours, sometimes three. On one or two occasions, it even went four. It depends what's in the news. There are several news stories I could have gone over today. I've decided to hold off on them. One being the situation in Saudi Arabia, because the king died, and why it's important is this. You've been noticing at the gas stations that your gas prices have gone down. However, during the last week, they've actually gone back up. Now, if there's a change in Saudi's policy in regarding OPEC, whether or not it's going to cut production, and it would be in the Saudi interest to do that, because if they cut production, what's going to happen? Oil prices are going to go back up, and that means you're going to be paying more at the gas tank. So the question is, will the current policy that Saudi's following, trying to sell, actually increase production where demand is actually down, what that does is lead to exactly what we've had for the last 6 months, declining oil prices. Now, I believe what the Saudi government was doing, and remember, Saudi Arabia is an absolute monarchy. And the king just died. He died about 6 o'clock yesterday evening, I think 5 o'clock Central Time. And I don't want to get into the details of the who's following yet, because I want to see what really shakes out here. But what they were doing is this. They have several enemies that really want to overthrow the Saudi family, the royal family. And who are they? First and foremost is the Iranians, because they're Shiites. They're, first of all, they're Persians, and they, although they're Islamic, they believe in Shiite or Shia Islam, which about 10% of Muslims follow. But in Iran, the overwhelming majority are Shiite. The Saudis are Sunni. As a matter of fact, they're the Wahhabi sect of Sunniism or Islam. And the Sunnis don't like the Shia, and the Shia don't like the Sunnis, and the Arabs don't like the Persians, and the Persians don't like the Arabs. So there's no love lost between the Saudis or the Iranians. And who gets hurt when oil prices go down? Iran. Big time gets hurt because they're a high-cost producer. Who also gets hurt? Russia gets hurt. Who are the allies of Syria? Russia is. And to some extent, they are also allies of Iran. Who is supporting the Assad regime in Syria? Iran is, through Hezbollah. So that's another reason for the Saudis using the oil weapon. They're sitting on literally, think of it as a large lake of oil that can be, I won't say sucked out with a straw, but they're a relatively low-cost producer, and they're sitting on a lot of it. That's the key thing. Petroleum is a world market. It's a competitive market. And when you're in a situation of declining demand but increasing supply, then prices are going to fall. Now, in the past, what the Saudis would do in this kind of situation is cut back on production. And if you do that, you could quickly bring up the price of oil in terms of a barrel. And once you did that, though, who benefits? Russia would benefit, as well as Iran, and so would U.S. producers, especially those that in the United States, the independence companies that have been heavily doing oil and gas exploration in the shale using fracturing. So the key question now is, will there be any change at all vis-a-vis OPEC in terms of oil production? And this could have an impact either way. If they reverse themselves, then gasoline prices will go right back up. To the extent how fast it will depend on how much production Saudi cuts back, or will they continue doing what they're doing now? If they just keep production where it's at, it will fall for the simple reason demand is falling. worldwide, because you have Europe, parts of Europe in a recession. The United States is doing relatively well, but China's growth is dramatically slowed down. So this is a story that's going to play out in the next several weeks, and you will see it at the gas pump, one way or the other. Either it's going to go back down. It was heading down. I noticed it. I was coming home from a little shopping, and it was $1.75 a gallon. The next day, it was $1.89. That's a dramatic jump. Usually in the past, it would go down 2 or 3 cents a week, but suddenly it spiked up. Now, this could have been anticipation of the fact that the king of Saudi Arabia was in the hospital, and there was some uncertainty as to exactly what would be the royal family or the Saudi government's policy in regard to oil production. I don't think there's going to be a change, but it might take a week or two before that's completely clarified. So I'll keep you posted on that, but it's something to keep your attention at, because if you think, a lot of people were thinking, and so was I, that what the Saudis were trying to do is really punish their enemies, because they're threatened by the Shia in Iran, as well as those supporting the Hezbollah, supporting the Assad regime, but they're also threatened by the Islamic State, which are Sunni Arabs that want to really overthrow the Saudi government. They regard the Saudi royal family as corrupt and would like to attack and take over and overthrow the royal family. Now, that's not going to be a cakewalk, because the Saudis have an air force. I know they have F-15s, but they have a fairly large military and could put up a rather good fight. But the Saudi government is threatened. It's threatened by Iran, should it develop a nuclear capability, but also the fact that Iran relies on oil, so the Saudis have in the past and have recently used oil as a weapon. Now, I've said on a previous show that one of the beneficiaries of lower oil prices is the American consumer in terms of gasoline that he's paying. I just happened to fill up my tank before the spike up, but it cost me less than $20 to do that. In the past, it would cost me nearly $40 to do it. Now, I'm fortunate I don't drive very much, but that's still, it's saving me roughly somewhere between $15 and $20 a month. If you really commute every day and have a long commute, you save a lot of money. So as long as the Saudis were going to pursue a policy of trying to lower the world price of petroleum, and they're in the position to do it, that benefits U.S. consumers, and it also benefits U.S. businesses in general, because all your goods and services need to be shipped. So when gasoline prices go down, so do the over time, it's not immediate, but the cost of shipping goods goes down. So that's beneficial to the economy. That's like many people have compared it to a tax cut. So overall, I think it benefited the American consumer as well as businesses. It did hurt, however, and will hurt those in the oil industry that are heavily invested in trying to get either natural gas or oil out of shale. And that's in Texas as well as, it's on the East Coast, West Coast, the Dakotas. But my point is this, if you're trying to explore and have projects that you'd like to pursue, but it's relying, let's just take a simple example. To make the project cost effective, it needs to come in at, let's say, $80 to $90 a barrel in terms of, its cost can't exceed that, is what I'm trying to say. And with petroleum, a barrel in the mid-40s heading towards 30s, and I thought it would go down to as low as 30, somewhere between 30 and 40 before they would stop this. And they were going to probably do it for a period of about 2 years. And we've already had 6 months of this. I alert you to this because if you were counting on declining gasoline prices, maybe you should at least reconsider, or at least follow closely, what's happening in Saudi Arabia and whether or not there will be a change in the Saudi production policy vis-a-vis OPEC. Obviously, the OPEC producers would like Saudi Arabia to cut production, but not the other nations. That would benefit them. But it's not in the Saudis' interest to do that. And because they're such a large, dominant supplier, they can more or less set the price of oil globally. Now, one thing that has resulted in a decline independent of Saudi is the fact that you had oil companies in the United States dramatically increasing the reserves of natural gas and petroleum. So it's not just Saudis that you got to look at it. You got to look at the fact that it's been the dramatic increase of finding natural gas and oil in the United States has impacted the price of petroleum worldwide. They're sort of both in, they're not in sync in the sense that to the extent that the Saudis increase production and lower the price, and in turn that lowers the price of a barrel of oil, that hurts our producers to the extent that their projects rely on a higher cost of production before they'll go ahead with it. What has happened and will continue to happen unless this reverse is projects that were being considered now are either been put on hold or completely canceled. Now, the American consumer up to at least this week has benefited, but that could turn around. Enough said. Now, I've been listening. If you listen to the show, you know I sample talk radio. I like to see what people are calling in on because we're simply not equipped at KDUX Web Radio for call-ins. So this show has no call-ins and it has no ads. So I typically talk for about an hour, sometimes more, sometimes less, where your typical commercial talk radio show is 42 minutes. Where 18 of those minutes are for commercials. And of that 42 minutes, a lot are people calling in asking questions. So I like to listen to a number of shows just to get the sense of what people are calling in on, what they're interested in, what's their take. But was driving me absolutely batty this week. Now, I'm not accusing everybody because I don't listen to everybody in talk radio. But there was a story dominating the news, and you probably are aware of it, that I could care. I have absolutely no interest in the story. No interest. And that is, it's a sports story. And the reason is I gave up following professional sports many, many years ago, at least 20 years ago, mainly because the teams in the past that I supported were either sold or moved. Some were both, but were moved from wherever I was to another city. That happened to me when I was young, a kid. When the Brooklyn Dodgers moved to Los Angeles, I immediately stopped following the Dodgers. And was a little bit older, in grad school, the Los Angeles Raiders were moved, the Oakland Raiders were moved to Los Angeles. Now, I know subsequently they moved back, but the point is, at that point, I said, enough is enough. This is a business. And that needs to be emphasized. Football, professional football is a business. This is about money, folks. It's part of the entertainment business, and it's big business, and it's very profitable business if the franchise is run right and if you happen to be in a big media market. So I understand that in every major city, including Dallas, the Fort Worth area, Dallas-Fort Worth, there's tremendous interest in football, and you have your die-hard Dallas Cowboy fans. But I simply don't no longer follow any professional support. That's my choice. I have better things to do with my time. Now, I'm not being critical of anyone that's interested in sports. I understand that. At one time, I was very interested in sports, but I felt that I was somewhat double-crossed, and that can happen at any time. And whatever city you're in, if you're fortunate to have one or more professional teams, sometimes they have good years, sometimes they have bad years, and you root for your team and you invest some time in it. But really, if you think about it, whether your team wins or loses, it really has little, if any, consequences. Not to the owners. The owners want their teams to win and hopefully be in the Super Bowl because that means money in their pocket. That said, I simply don't follow sports. The other thing, and this is a little, some people think I'm a little odd in this regard, and this happened much later. I would be watching television. So finally, I said, you know, television is addictive. Even though I'd be reading, I would have the television on, and it was interfering with my reading. And I sat down and thought about it, and he said, a lot of this, there's some good shows, and I typically would watch the news show. But there's typically a good movie or good television program that I would follow. But most of it was, I didn't pay attention to it. It was a waste of time, to be polite about it. So one day I turned off the television and have not turned it on since. And this has been many, many years ago. I don't have a today I don't have a television at home. Don't have a computer at home. Don't have a television at home. Because what I do at home besides sleep and eat is read and sample talk radio, because I'm in the talk radio business. Now, if I wasn't in talk radio, I probably would not listen to as much talk radio. I'd listen to some, but certainly not as much as I do now. Now, what was driving me nuts was, and you're probably aware of it because you couldn't miss it, was the controversy over the so-called deflated footballs of the New England Patriots. And did anyone cheat? The coach has denied it. The quarterback has denied it. And I think both of them know that the league, the National Football League, even though they're investigating, really doesn't have a clue as to what happened. So they're sticking to their story. I don't know. I have other things, more important things to look at besides what is the pressure of the football. And I believe both of them in that regard. There's a lot more that they have to pay attention to if they're going to win a game as to whether or not the footballs are properly, have the required 12.5 to 13.5 pounds per square inch pressure in them. That, after saying that, though, if you talk to quarterbacks, they will all tell you that they're very particular about the footballs that they use in the games. Now, I'm not going to get any further into it. I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I certainly don't know what happened, and I'll be perfectly candid. I don't really care what happened. And that's what was driving me nuts. Because several, not one, but several of these talk show hosts, and this is somewhat out of character, not completely, went on and on and on and on about this story. And I turned them off several times. Several of my favorites I turned off. I couldn't stand listening to this. I don't care. Now, in my case, it's somewhat of an extreme situation. I don't care about sports. So if you're going to go on and on and on about a sports story or last night's game, I don't care if it's baseball, basketball, I'm going to turn you off. And there's a reason for that. There are shows dedicated, talk radio shows dedicated to cover sports. I never tune them on. I never tune them in. I wouldn't know what stations they are or what time they're on, but I know they're there. But if you're interested in sports, I understand you want to hear what happened and you're curious about it. So to a certain extent, I can see at least mentioning this. But this went way beyond mentioning. And I don't think I'm the only one that was complaining, because one of the talk show hosts rather indirectly mentioned that there are a number of people that are more concerned about the issues, and that I would put myself in that camp, that are sick and tired of this entire story. Now, this is somewhat unusual for talk radio. Not completely unusual, because a lot of people that are in talk radio today, or at least a significant minority of them, earlier wanted to be sportscasters or commentators on sports. That's what they like. They like sports. You know, they couldn't make it in sports, but they like to cover it, and they have their opinion, and they follow the game. I understand that. My attitude is, if you feel so strongly about it, then go there and do it. Become a sportscaster. And many of them did it and are still doing it. Terrific. Whatever floats your boat. But when I tune into a talk radio show, I expect commentary and opinion on the leading news stories of the day. And I think I'm not in a minority. I think I'm in a majority. And I was hearing this from local as well as nationally syndicated shows. So it wasn't a good week if you were a talk show listener that really wanted your host, whether it's Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levin, Hannity, and I didn't listen to all of these, but to the extent that they were focusing on this story, and some of them weren't, by the way, I need to be fair here, but the ones I typically listen to are in the morning, Bill Bennett, who's a big football guy, as well as Mark Davis, Rush Limbaugh, occasionally Hannity, but when I'm driving in, I'll be listening to Savage. Usually I can't listen. I could listen to him when it was on the evening. In the afternoon, I simply can't do it because I have other things to do. Occasionally I'll listen to Mark Levin. And then in the late, well, I'll go through the whole roster. There's one show that's talk radio, but it's not call-ins. And that's The Bachelor Show that today I would say is one of my favorite shows. They don't have call-ins. He's mainly doing interviews. And I don't agree with some of the material that he covers, but he's going to interview people on subjects that he's interested in. And a lot of the time I'm interested in it. Occasionally I'm not. And if he's talking about something I'm not interested in, I'll just shut him off. And that's what I advise you to do. If someone is talking about a story or has a segment that doesn't, turn it off. Do something else. I do it all the time. And then I like him the best because he has experts on in different areas. You're not just getting the commentator's take. He's actually doing a lot more interviews. But he also mixes it up. He covers current news stories as well as book review. I want to say book reviews. He'll interview the author of books. And a lot of them, for example, I would say about a month ago is my guess, he interviewed an author that had written a book about the Dreyfus Affair that I subsequently read. And it was a terrific book. And I can understand why Bachelor had him on. And it sort of piqued my interest. And this is a book I didn't buy. I checked it out from the Richland College Library. It caught my eye. I said, this is the book that I heard Bachelor interviewing the author. Now, the final show I listen to, typically at early morning, is Charlie Jones. Now, his show is not called The Charlie Jones Show. Texas in the Night, I always have trouble remembering the name of the show, but I know he does. But the point is, Charlie is heavily involved with call-ins. That's his format. Now, he mixes it up because on early Friday morning today, it's movie, so I get a good night's sleep on Friday. Not that I'm not interested in movie, but I'm not going to stay up on Fridays when that is the subject. And occasionally, I'll have, at least once a month, he'll have it on technology, which I'm interested in. But Charlie also is heavily interested in sports, so he went over this football deflation gate, whatever they're calling it, and I turned him off. And I would turn him on about 30 minutes. He's still talking about it because he's getting call-ins. Everyone has his opinion on this. I don't. And maybe I'm sort of giving a warning to my fellow talk show host. You better start paying attention to your audience. Now, yes, you can generate calls, and sports is a great topic, but are you doing news events or are you going to focus in on sports? Because if you're going to focus in on sports, I'm turning you off. I can take maybe 3 to 5 minutes and I'm gone. And a number of hosts were going way over that limit. And they were doing it day after day after day. So I follow my own advice. If someone bores me, and I could be boring you right now. I was debating whether even to go here. But I need to really air the fact that why there are people that enjoy sports and follow sports, and the real diehards listen to talk shows that specialize in sports, your typical talk show listener, whether it's a Dallas Cowboy fan or Oakland Raider fan or New York Jet fan, typically don't tune in talk radio and don't want to hear an hour or an hour and a half of call-ins as well as opinions on a sports story, especially this sports story. I really don't care whether the Patriots or Seahawks win. I will not be watching the Super Bowl, and I hope they will let this deflation gate story alone. Let it rest. Now, I know after the Super Bowl, they're going to be going at least for 15 to 30 minutes on and on about the Super Bowl. I sort of hope that the New England Patriots blow out the Seahawks. In other words, repeat what they did in this game. I don't think that's going to happen, but I sort of hope so. So it would end this. Now, it's not going to end. Why? Why is it not ending? It's called ratings, viewers. That's why the talk show hosts were covering this. That's why all your news networks were covering this. Ratings. Higher ratings means more advertising and more revenue. So they make a decision, I don't care whether it's news or talk radio, to try to cover stories that they think their audience is interested in. And the problem is, it wasn't confined to one network. Usually when there's one story being beat to death, just go to CNN and you can find it. CNN will be on it and on it and on it. They beat the dead horse to death until people are calling in saying, please stop. There are other news stories out there. But that's what it's come to, which gets me to the really point of this show. And if I had call-ins, this was the time I would accept the call-ins. Where do you get your news? Where do you get your news? Now, in the past, the majority of Americans would say, from the nightly network news. I would have said that in the 60s, 70s, 80s. But over time, I gradually stopped listening to the news. Part of it was the perception by me that they were biased. Politically biased, which is true. They are predominantly liberal progressives, which means they favor Democrats, especially on the presidential level. And that influences their news coverage. Now, remember, news should be news. It's not opinion. It's not commentary. And you need to understand that difference because a lot of people don't understand that difference. So let me at least explain it to you. What I'm doing right now is called commentary or opinions. I'm giving you my opinion or my comments on a news event. Now, to do that, I usually have to provide you some setup or a short synopsis or summary of the news story that I'm going to be commenting on. I'm going to give you my point of view, my comments, opinions. I don't do what's called straight news. But what I expect from a television news show is to give me the news, not the opinions, just the facts. Now, the problem is, especially today, a lot of people can't distinguish that because there are a lot of opinion shows. Listen to Fox. They have a segment that is strictly news. And a lot of people watch Fox News. I don't because I don't have a television. Occasionally, I might get a glimpse of it because I'm in the Richland Chronicle newsroom and we have a television that's always on, usually either to Fox or CNN. Depends who's in the newsroom. And occasionally, if I'm there, either doing post-production or show prep, I'll catch some of the newscast. But most of the time, what Fox is doing is airing opinion shows, such as, you know, the No Spin Zone, the Bill O'Reilly Show, Hannity, Kelly File. There's several. Those are all opinion shows. Now, the typical format is they invite people in to get their opinion on a news story. And the typical format is they'll play a clip of the news event that summarizes it and then ask whoever the guest is their opinion of it. They ask questions and they also air their own opinions. So that's as firmly in the column, if you will, as a commentary or opinion type show. And they're very, very successful. Why? People are interested in hearing other people's views. It's not hard to understand why talk radio is taken off. And it's not hard to understand why Fox News, with more than half a dozen of these shows, has taken off in terms of the ratings. Because there's a market for that. There's an appetite for that. There are people that want to hear what other people think on various news events, whether it's politics, business, world affairs, the economy, immigration, legal and illegal, as well as what the president's doing, what Congress is doing. Now, not everybody is interested in that. I understand it. The people that are news junkies, and I put myself in that category, are typically the people that are going to either view these types of shows, no matter what network it is on, as well as listen to talk radio. The people that are not going to look at any of this are people that want straight entertainment. That could be sports, that could be a regular television program, it could be a movie, a host of things, but that's entertainment. Sports is entertainment, and it's big business. because it does require a substantial amount of capital to cover sporting events. But the reason why the network, networks do it, it brings in bucks. There's a lot of viewers that want to watch sporting events. So it brings in the advertising, and that's why kind of their bread and butter today are sporting events. Doesn't matter whether it's football, baseball, basketball, hockey. There is a audience for that, and people will tune in, and there are advertisers that want to capture that audience in the sense of running ads promoting their products. And that's how it's paid for, through advertising. You need to understand that. The kind of the joke is the most important content on television or print or radio are the ads. That pays the bills. That pays the salaries of all the people you see on TV and all the people you don't see in the control room and the journalists that go out and investigate various stories. What you need to understand, though, as over time, your three major networks, CBS, ABC, and NBC, their news shows, and they cost money. They're very much a cost center. Their ratings have gone down, down, and down, as has the average number of viewers per night. And I've given you a chart. I need to say this. I should have said this earlier. The way you listen to this show is go to my companion blog for the show, which is prankpops.wordpress.com. That's prankpops, prankpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll see a picture of me in the studio, and right underneath, you'll see links to the last 60 to 80 shows. And at the very bottom, you'll have links to my complete portfolio of shows. But in between, you'll have some of my show prep. And I'll be honest, this doesn't have a lot of show prep. I did a lot of show prep, but I couldn't find what I was looking for in terms of details, because there weren't many YouTube videos on this. And the more I thought about it, I said, I know why. The networks definitely don't want you to be aware that they're losing viewers. But this is happening not only in news shows on television, but also in the papers. What's happening, and it's been going on for over 30, well, I would say 40 years at least, you've had more competitors. And it really declined, I believe, with the introduction of the internet. And that came on about 1995. It was going down prior to that in terms of viewership, but it really declined after that. Now, why? Not hard to understand. Just talk to your young children and I'll tell you. Most people today, especially young people under 30, get their news online. Now, you might be surprised, and I was surprised as to where they get it. A lot of them get it on Facebook. I never would have, well, I wouldn't say I wouldn't have suspected that. I wouldn't think that would be a primary source, but that's where they're getting some of it. They're hearing about news stories in so-called social media. So they're talking with their friends. They're either text messaging or Twittering or going on Facebook. So that's one place, social media, they're getting their news. Now, yeah, I have a Facebook account, but I haven't been at my own Facebook account in months. I initially got interested in it, and then after a while, totally backed off. Now, some people that have talk show hosts also have Facebook accounts where they give information on their show. I chose not to go that route. Instead, I provide what I call my show notes, my part of my prep on my companion blog. It sort of suits me better than Facebook. Not suits me better, a lot better. I wouldn't do what some talk show hosts do, put material that they want their audience to see on their Facebook account. Whatever floats your boat. If that's the way you want to go, fine. I chose another way, and I'm not the only one doing it my way, but there are different ways to attract and keep an audience. Others use Twitter. I tried Twitter, and I dropped it rather quickly. It doesn't suit me. It suits a lot of people, but not me. It's not for me. You won't catch me Twittering at all. Now, some talk show hosts, again, not mentioning any names, love Twitter and try to build an audience that way. Okay. Again, whatever works for you, and if it works for you, more power to you. I'm not into Twitter, and I definitely don't use Facebook. But here's the key point. A lot of people get their news from Facebook and other social media, and you need to recognize that. They're spending time there, and the time they spend there, they're not spending watching the nightly newscast, whether it's on the major networks or on cable. It doesn't mean they don't watch TV. They watch TV, but they get their news from other sources. Now, I'll tell you where I get my news. And a lot of people in talk radio get their news. And it's somewhat of a problem. I religiously, and I think most talk show hosts, not all, but most, go the first thing they do, or they part of their show prep, their routine, is to go to the Drudge Report. I do that every day. Now, do I literally go through all the stories on the Drudge Report? No, I don't have time, nor am I interested in probably 80% of the stories on Drudge I'm not interested in. I'm simply not. I screen them out, and I think other people do the same thing. They're screening out. They might be looking at stories that I would never go to. Sometimes, though, something catches my eye, and I will click on it and read the story. But why do I go to the Drudge Report? See, in one time in network television news, they when they didn't have the Drudge Report, and Drudge was enabled by the internet. He was one of the pioneers and has now captured a huge audience. But at one time, before the internet, what most of your television news, network news shows would do is read the New York Times, and based on what the New York Times was leading, base their newscast on. You can take it to the bank. That's the way it was done. Does it mean every network had the exact same stories? No, but many, if not most of their stories, appeared in the New York Times, and then the producer of the show, the news show, would decide which ones that they were going to cover. But invariably, the lead was whatever the New York Times decided to publish. Was it right? No. Did they always do this? No. Because they did have a much larger news staff there. And the people that were doing stories were assigned stories that were not necessarily what the New York Times was publishing that day. So there was some mix. But if you were in the past to look at the three network news, you would see a striking similarity between all three of the news shows. And it had a bias. You better believe it had a bias, because the New York Times has a bias. Yes, it's that liberal, progressive, democratic bias, especially East Coast New York City. No more. And I used to read the New York Times. They had a magazine that for many, many years. I read their magazine, and I would always read the Sunday edition. I haven't looked at a New York Times in years. 20 at least. Part of it's the internet. Part of it, I woke up to the fact, man, these people have a political philosophy that I don't believe in. And they're biased. Now, how are they biased? And this is something, unless you worked in a newspaper, it's hard to pick up. Now, I haven't worked in a newspaper. I worked in a newsroom, but on a college. That's a different level. But a lot of the people our advisors have. And what you need to understand, that one way their bias is what doesn't get in the paper. I've had it on a few occasions. This happened to me, but nowhere near the problems you have when you're in a commercial paper. Because you can work on a story, you're paid, you're salaried, and you're assigned certain stories, you work on it. And if there's a political bias and your story doesn't track that bias, it's not that they're going to necessarily change your story. They just won't run it. That's the problem. And if they are going to run it, they'll make changes, subtle changes. And then you get into the problem of what's called AP style, Associated Press style. And I have problems with that. I understand what it's about, but I've seen biases there. So one way you lead your readers is by not publishing stories that have an entirely different point of view. And you don't cover a whole bunch of stories that could be critical of a Democratic president or congressman or senator. It's a problem. And people have woken up to that.
I think part of the problem that network television has, as well as the newspapers, is their audience woke up. They got smart. They knew they were being manipulated. They knew they were being played. And they revolted. And they stopped buying the paper. They stopped watching the television news. And they've never gone back, and they probably never will. Does that mean on occasion they might not read a New York Times or Washington Post? I do it several times every month. I don't deliberately go there. I'm usually looking for information on a story that I want to cover on the show. And I look at various points of view. And then I finally said, okay, here's my summary of the story, and here's my take or opinion on the story. You see, audience is key, folks, because the advertisers buy audiences. They're trying, a business typically is trying to get the attention of the audience. A lot of it is just reminding you we're here and we offer a certain product or service. Some of it is trying to convince you they're better. So when people place their advertising, they're looking at a certain it's called demographics. What's the age, the sex, the income of your audience, your typical listener? And talk radio caters to a certain demographic. Usually it's older, people that are interested in politics, news events, usually people that are more educated, more income, independent, make up their own minds, and to a certain extent want to hear different points of view, as well as the opinion of the host, but also the opinion of others. Is that for everybody? No, it's not for everybody. And for reasons I'm not completely clear on, although I have my opinions on it, talk radio is predominantly either conservative and or libertarian, classical liberal. It's not liberal. It's not that there aren't liberal talk show hosts. Yes, there are. But I frankly couldn't listen to them. And that's the same reason why I stopped listening to the television newscast. And it's the same reason I stopped reading both newspapers and magazines. Because slowly but surely, the political biases of any person, especially in the news, come out. Now, here's what you need to understand. They shouldn't come out. Now, let me quickly say, it's all right on an opinion show or a talk radio show to have a point of view. It's expected that you have a point of view, but that is quite different from the news. The ideal is they're not supposed to be biased. They're supposed to be objective. Well, that's the fairy tales that they tell you in journalism school. But the reality is I haven't run into anybody that is really objective and is not biased. We all have our biases, and I try to tell a news story when I'm setting it up what the facts are. I'm not trying to lie about it. But the problem is the blending of the news into opinion, it's happening. And unfortunately, what's happened to the networks, and I think they're going to pay a heavy price. They are paying a heavy price for it. People wake up, and that means they stop listening or stop viewing the shows because they see the bias and they don't like it because it's against their candidate or against their political philosophy or political point of view. And they know that even though these so-called newscasters or anchors should be objective, they're not. Producers can kill shows. And their people have resigned from news organizations because of that, have left after many, many years. Because they would get the assignment, do a good story, and they never ran the story. Well, how many times does that happen before you say enough is enough? See, I've written many news stories that have been in the college paper, but a number of them haven't been run. I can live with that. I don't really have a choice. If the editor says I'm not running it, and it's usually simply they don't have space. And I understand there's a constraint. The same thing on a nightly news. There are only so many minutes. And if, let's say, there are 8 key stories and they only have time for 6, and yours is 7 or 8, they're not going to run with it. And then the following night, you have a news cycle, and you're not going to run an old story. But sometimes, and I would say, unfortunately, too many times, a story that should have been run was pushed out because of the biases in the networks. There have been books written about this that you can read. But what I'm leading up to is you need to be aware of this, and you need to decide how you are going to get the news. I go to the Drudge. My starting point typically is the Drudge Report. Is that my ending point? No, it's certainly not. Yeah, I'll look at the story that Drudge, for example, will have. If you've, what I suggest to do if you're unfamiliar with the Drudge Report is go to the Drudge Report and just look at it. All it is three columns of links to news stories, as well as columns. It's a great resource, but once I pick a story, for example, that I'll probably cover on the show, what I do is I'm going to Google to see what other news reports are available. I'm also going to go to YouTube and see what YouTube clips are available. And when I go to articles and other news stories, after reading them, I will almost invariably Google or use YouTube to follow up on in terms of the details. So I'm gathering information. I'm formulating my own opinion, but trying to get an understanding, a more complete understanding of a news event that happened. Make sure the details are correct, because many times you'll get conflicting details and you're not sure who to believe. That's especially true with a breaking story that we had a couple of weeks ago with Charlie Hebdo in France, the terrorist attack. And anyone that's been through this a couple of times, you know that the earlier reports, they invariably are going to have a lot wrong. So you better be very, very careful what you say, because it might be based on totally erroneous information. So that's the process I go through preparing a show. And today, initially, my idea when I was driving in is I said, I'm going to air my complaint, my grievance about both talk radio and the television networks going on and on and on about this, what's called Deflationgate. And what really annoyed me was, okay, I'm bored with it. I understand that. Sports is not my interest or passion. I'm bored, silly. I used to play sports. It's not that I'm against sports. I used to be a sports fan, but now I'm not. But I know a lot of people are. So there's always a temptation, and I think a great temptation, especially if you're on commercial radio, to go there. And they go there. It's like clockwork. A lot of times it's what the Dallas Cowboys did. Well, I can take about 5 minutes of that, but, you know, just tell me the score, who won, move on. But no, they spent 30 minutes or an hour on it, and I'm going, wait a minute. I thought this was a talk radio on news events. I think there's more than just the sports page. And sometimes they go the whole 3 or 4 hours on it. That's when I got that, and that's a good night. You know why? I go to sleep, or good afternoon. I get other work done. It's disappointing. I wish they had a little perspective. I'm not saying don't cover it, but if the people that are interested in news, politics, business, current events, okay, 5-10 minutes tops, then move on to some other story. But for some reason, this story went on and on and on. I know that the New England Patriots are going to be in the Super Bowl. And I was joking. I was in the Richland Chronicle newsroom. I said, you know something? With this Sony movie, the Interview, and this current scandal, I'm willing to, these two events are just a publicity stunt, just a big publicity stunt to get more people to view and get excited about the movie and now the Super Bowl. More people will watch this Super Bowl than ever for whatever reason, because some of them think they cheated. I don't know if they cheated. Before you make that acquisition, you better have the proof, because you've had the coach and the quarterback deny it. And I know they're doing an investigation, but do you really think that the National Football League, with 9 days before the Super Bowl, are going to release the results of that investigation? Dream on. We're talking money here, big money. This is a big business. And I really think that the coach and the quarterback know deep down that the league doesn't really know what happened, doesn't have a clue what happened. If anything happened, I need to say that, if anything happened. And I've listened to other quarterbacks say, yes, the quarterbacks are real fussy about the balls. I understand that. But that doesn't mean they cheated. There's always that possibility. But why beat the story to death? Why? You can summarize this story in less than 5 minutes, and you're not going to add any information to it, or very little information. Everyone has their opinion one way or the other, and that is one reason that this story is getting a lot of play. And it really has no consequences, except for the few that are either betting on the game or are rabid fans of one team or the other, or the people that own the teams, as well as the NFL. So the Super Bowl will go on as scheduled. Who knows who's going to win? I hope whoever you're rooting for wins. I don't have any skin in this game, and I won't be watching it, and I certainly won't be reporting on it. But we have a more fundamental problem. What we're seeing, and a good example of it was this week, is the decline and fall of network television news. Because what happened? All the networks, both your three major networks, and as well as your cable networks, Fox, as well as CNN, were covering this. No argument that they shouldn't cover it. It's the extent of the coverage. The full press conference with the coach and then the quarterback. Give me a break. Now, yes, I know you have ESPN. I've never watched it. That covers sports. That's fine for them. We're talking news, major news networks, as well as cable, going on and on and on about this. I think the majority of American people could care less. Yeah, the sports fans that are going to be on this, but most people have lives and they work for a living, or they're trying to get an education. And there are other way more important things happening in the world, yet the powers that be, your major networks controlled by very large corporations that rely on advertising dollars to make their money, they in their collective wisdom or stupidity went on and on and on about this story. This is just a symptom of what has led to their declining ratings and viewership. I'm talking now newscast, not the opinion shows. That's a different kettle of fish, if you will, because there is an appetite for opinion shows, whether it's on television or talk radio. And that's why that format has been highly successful. And there are people well paid both in the television and in the radio part of it, talk radio. Now, I will say, because I have sampled a fair number of these shows, everyone has their own style, everyone has their own interest, and there is difference of formats. Some rely almost entirely on call-ins. They're not the better shows. They're not the better shows, because the people that call in, sometimes they make terrific points, but a lot of them, even though they're screened, are terrible. The real stars in the industry can carry, if not the whole show, a large segment of the show. And if they can't do that, they have producers, people that will go out and seek people to interview. The problem with that, you're relying on the capability of whoever you're interviewing to be interesting. Many are, some just bore me to tears. And that's the risk you run if you're going to go that way. And some have no call-ins, and it's strictly interviews. And there are a very few, that could carry the entire show. I would put Rush Limbaugh in that category, as well as Michael Savage and yours truly. Most people cannot talk for 1, 2, or 3 hours straight. Because if you're going to do that, you better prepare. If you think they come in and just open the mic and start talking, you're sadly mistaken. Yes, over time, they learn the tricks of the trade, and there are tricks of the trade. But show prep is absolutely crucial. And you better be interesting, you better be informative, and you better be entertaining. Because if you're not going to last very long. That's why many people in talk radio rely increasingly, to a certain extent, on more calls, hoping that they'll get the good call or they invite guests on. It's really the latter that most of them do if they have the budget and are capable of getting the guest on the show. Some, because of their connections in Washington or New York or wherever they're based, can get a certain number of people on. It's more difficult, especially if you're doing a late evening or early morning show, to do that, because let's face it, who wants to wake up at 2 o'clock and be 2 o'clock in the morning and be interviewed? Some people do, and I rarely call, and something I need to say, I rarely call any talk show. I used to do that initially 15, 20 years ago. Don't do it that much, if at all. Occasionally, when I think someone really needs help and I have the time, yeah, I'll dial and I'll get on and I'll say, for example, this happened, I don't know, a couple of months ago when the Ebola breakout was coming on, and one of the talk show host was going on and on about this, and he was referring to one book, The Hot Zone. But I was reading, I just happened to be reading, and I'm not making this up, another book on this subject, but it was a lot broader. It was about various infectious diseases, and it was a very popular book, and I forget the title. I think it's The Coming Plague. So I called up this talk show host. This was in the early morning, and said, really, the book you really should read, and I gave the author and the title, and I said, I know you don't like people reading. Let me just read two or three sentences of the latter stages of what Ebola does to you. And I did. And the talk show host, he probably doesn't remember me, but he asked me a question. Initially, I didn't catch the question, but he says, is it a thick book? And I said, yes, it's a very thick book. And I doubt if he ever bought it, because once I said it's a thick book, I think his mind shut down. And I can understand why, because he doesn't have time to read a thick book. A thin book, okay. An article, okay. A thick book, no, I don't think so. But I was trying to get the bigger picture on a breaking and continuing news story, and I spent time on it because I knew this story was going to be in the news for weeks, which it was, and I wanted to get smart on it. That's what you need to do if you're serious about being an established talk show host. You have to spend the time. You got to pay your dues. You can't mail it in. And you can't rely on callers. And I'll also be further, you can't rely on the people you're interviewing. Because why, some are very good, some are terrible. And I had this, and I'm not going to say the show, because it's one of my favorite shows. But I had to go shopping, and I was interested in, he had a guest calling in from somewhere in the Middle East. And I was interested in it because he was going to tell us that supposedly this person had insight as to exactly what was happening in Libya today. And the talk show host set it up, introduced him, and this guy started to talk. I don't know if it was the connection or what, but I won't say I completely could not understand him, but this guy had a foreign accent, and I couldn't understand. Generally, I couldn't even get the gist of what he was saying. I got every few words I could understand, but there was a language problem or a communication problem. So I had to go shopping. So after about 2 minutes of this, I turned it off, went shopping, and then went on my way home. I had to pick up some milk and bread, and that's what I did. Came back. By the time I got in the car, this guy was off the air. And that just points up the problem. It's very hit or miss. And I think the talk show host probably knows that and probably is not going to invite this gentleman on. Again, I don't know if he got any complaints, but I was prepared to listen and sit in my car until that segment was over. But after about a minute or two, I said, I can't make out what he's saying. And I was very interested in the topic, and especially someone that supposedly knows about it. So that's the risk you run if you're going to put your career on interviewing people. Some are going to be very good. Some that you would think would be great because their writing is great. When you get them on the air, they just can't articulate. And some just are boring. And in the worst case, incomprehensible. So everyone picks their format, their style. And that's what makes for good talk radio, and that's what makes for good television. But that is when you're dealing with opinion. When you're dealing with news, I'm very much, tell me the facts. Tell me the high points. But I'll tell you, and this is an important point, and this is where I think the network news falls down mightily today. Why I want the facts, just the facts, ma'am. I don't want your opinion. I want the facts. Here's something that they really don't do, and it's probably my biggest complaint. They don't connect the facts to stories that might have happened 2 or 3 days ago or to other stories that are irrelevant. They're very narrowly focused, and I know they have a time constraint, but if you're not going to make the connections from one story to the next, who is? And that's why I think talk radio has been successful, as well as television in terms of commentary. Because the people that do that will make the connections, if they're good. And they need to be made, and that's what the audience is interested in. They're looking for information. They're looking for different points of view. They want the facts, but they want your opinion and other people's opinion. So you don't mix, and unfortunately today, that line is no longer there for many newscasts. It should be there, and they pretend it's there, but it's not, and that's why they've lost the audience. Because if your audience picks up on this, you're done. Yes, you might get your loyalists, but the other side, people that have a different point of view, political philosophy, and you're not reporting the news, you're reporting the news and your slant and opinion on it. Once that becomes clear, and it doesn't take that long to pick up on it, assuming you're interested in this, they're going to shut you down. They're going to turn you off and they're not going to come back. And that has been the problem. And that's why I don't waste any time today listening to newscasts. Rarely. Now, some will say, given my flaw, I should be listening to Fox. Yeah, I prefer Fox, especially for the opinion side of it, but I rarely listen to their news. Rarely. Now, part of it is because I don't have a television. I don't rush home. I got to listen to the Fox News. Occasionally, I'll catch it, but it's not my cup of tea because I search out, and this is the important point, and this is what tens, hundreds of millions of people are doing today. They can find out the information on any news story. Part of it's a search engine, whether it's Google, part of it's YouTube, part of it is hyperlinks from one article to the next. And the advantage to the audience, they can focus in on what interests them. They're not interested in a lot of the stories. And that's the challenge that the television news networks have. They have a limited amount of time, and they should be covering the major stories, not this sports story. Other than, I wouldn't have given it 30 seconds. They were spending a lot more time than 30 seconds. Most news stories today are 15 to 30 seconds. I know because I've sat down and watched newscasts and wrote down what they were covering, how long the story was, and as well as the ads. And that might surprise you. If that's what I want, I can go to AP and get it. That's not what I want. Now, I have a rather point of view. I want more in-depth coverage, and I'm not getting it on any television newscast. And to the extent that they give you the facts, they slant it. Well, it hasn't been a good week. This is not a typical show because this is more a complaint, and I am not into complaining. But it's disappointing, and it's somewhat sad, but they brought it on themselves. And I don't think they've really learned, and I really don't think they're going to change. Their viewerships have gone down, down, and down, and now, just like the newspapers, magazines, television, what are they doing? They're cutting staff. They're cutting staff. So if you're trying to break into either the print or the television news, you have a challenge because it's going to be highly competitive. Only the best will survive. Now, I'm not sure necessarily the best. And your viewership is going down. You'll be less in demand. And there's competition amongst the networks as well as cable and those that can produce a good newscast will get the audience. With that, I need to close the show. I'm running a little bit long, and play my favorite song, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.